Again, as I was mentioning several years ago, the website Ancestry.com sold for over $1.6 billion because we are so fascinated about our past, and the mystery of where we came from really captures our imaginations. But what the thing that's so compelling about this is what happens when you discover more about your ancestors than you could have ever imagined. And I'm not exaggerating, and as we've been talking about, when I tell you that our next guest, our author on the line, uncovered the most startling truths about her family's past and about her own identity. And we have on the line with us an author, and she's going to be the keynote speaker on September 14th at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum for their What You Do Matters luncheon. And joining us is Jennifer Tiga. How are you doing, Jennifer?
I'm fine, thank you. Hello.
Hello. I've been reading so much about your journey, and I have been telling our listeners a little bit about your past, that your mother, your biological parents, your mother was German and your father was Nigerian, and you had been put place in a children's home at 4 weeks old. What set you on this journey to find out about your ancestors, about the history of your family?
Well, it was a coincidence. As you mentioned, I was adopted as a very young child. I was in an orphanage first and then adopted by a white German family. So I did know a little bit about my past. I was in contact with my biological mother and my grandmother when I was a little kid, but I haven't seen both of them for years. And one day, a few years ago, I was in a library. It was a very huge library in Germany, and I saw a book on a shelf. It was a book that had a red cover, and I picked it up from the shelf, and I started, first I glanced, of course, at the cover, then I started leafing through its pages, and there were some photographs included. There was one picture of a woman, and it was a woman with long hair, and she reminded me of my biological mother. There was another picture of an older woman, and this picture reminded me of my biological grandmother. At the very end of the book, there was a summarization of biographies, and they perfectly matched my adoptive, the record that I had of my adoption. So I understood that it was not just a random book, but it was a book that told the story of my biological family. This is how I found out.
Wow. I mean, what are the chances? How widely how publicized? I mean, how many publications of this book were there? Is it kind of a rare book?
It's a rare book, and it was in the psychology department, not in the history department. I mean, if you know about my family's history, you assume it's in the history department. No, it was really pure coincidence.
Wow. Well,
maybe it was fate.
It sounds a lot like fate. And from what I've been reading, you were intrigued and drawn to stories about the Holocaust, even at a young age.
Yes, I mean, in Germany, it's mandatory, the education about Holocaust, different to the United States. So I knew a lot about the Holocaust, and not only that I had been educated in school, I lived and studied in Israel without knowing anything about my biological family's past. I lived there as a young adult. I studied in Israel, if you speak Hebrew, it's Historia Shel Mizrach HaTichon, which means Middle Eastern studies and African studies, for a couple of years. So I was very connected to the Jewish history and the Jewish faith without knowing anything.
Unbelievable. And you know, I was telling our listeners as well that part of your journey was discovering, you know, once you found this book telling the story about your grandmother. And again, what was in that book about your grandmother and your mother that set you on this path?
Well, it's actually family chronicle. My mother is the daughter of Amon Goethe. And Amon Goethe, you are maybe not familiar with the name, but with the figure, because most of your listeners probably have seen the movie Schindler's List. And Schindler's List features Amon Goethe. He's the opponent of Oskar Schindler, who saved the Jews, and Amon Goethe killed the Jews. So my mother is the daughter, and my grandmother lived with Amon Goethe right outside the concentration camp as his mistress. And the story tells of the upbringing of my mother and about the family's connection to the war.
And you visited that house. That's what I was reading today, was about your visit to this home. And one of the great lines there was the crumbling walls holding up the past.
It was a visit, but a visit sounds a bit like if you go there for a touristic purpose.
Right.
No, it was really an inner journey. when I made the discovery, it was very shocking, because if you have an identity, and I obviously had, I was almost 40 when I made the discovery, it plunged me into a deep depression. And I wanted somehow, you know, to reconcile with the past. So that's why I went to Krakow, and the concentration camp is not existing anymore, but the old villa is still there. And it was a very moving experience, because you see it's so close, and especially when you're in the house, it seems like everything that happened years ago is just, you know, it's seconds away. And it was a very moving experience that actually helped me somehow to bring things closer and then let go ultimately.
And again, you know, I mentioned the word visit. That was kind of how you had presented yourself. Because, I mean, how do you, you know, approach the person that's going to show you the house and tell them your history? It's almost too, you know, unbelievable, really.
Yeah. Well, the book I write about it, I have written a book. I wanted to make the readers understand, also your listeners, that it's really a very personal experience. So I describe it very much into detail, that you can almost feel like yourself standing in the house, and then can feel the shivers. I mean, people lived there must have been afraid every day, because they had to fear for their life. Every day could have been the last day in their life.
You also write about
the servants,
yes,
lived there, obviously,
the maids,
not my grandmother.
Right. Right. You also share the story of there's a documentary in which your mother had written a letter to the maid who lived in the basement.
Yes, that's true. Her name is Helen, and Helen lived in the basement together with another maid, and she is featured with my mother in the movie. It's a heartbreaking documentary that shows the two women meeting for the first time. And it brings up a lot of memories, which is almost impossible to watch, because it's so heartbreaking.
And so much of this is, and that brings me to another point that you mentioned in your writing and some of the interviews that you've done, is that writing this book, and even though you had read so much, both in your youth and studying when you were older, and, you know, perhaps watching movies and things like that, but that this seems so much more immediate to you as you were writing the book when you discovered who your grandfather was.
Yes, but the book is not a therapy. It's also my book. It's a family chronicle. It tries to explain you things, but in a very personal way. It was not that I needed, I had therapy for many years after the coincidence, but when I discovered the book, because I needed the help of someone who really works professionally with post-traumatic stress syndromes. But the book was more really to, somehow make people understand how it feels. I mean, it's some just think, you know, it is very difficult, because it has to do a lot with identity, with family secrets, with the question who you are. Is guilt is guilt, can you inherit guilt, for example? So I try to cover all these things, but it's done in a very personal way, so that you can experience somehow, live it through my own eyes. It's written from my heart.
No, and that comes across very clearly in the way you've written so much of this from your heart. It jumps off the page. And when you say, can you inherit guilt, then, you know, when you talk to, I'm guessing you've spoken to Holocaust survivors or their descendants. What has that experience been like?
I've spoken to many. I mean, I've spoken to them before I knew about my identities when I lived in Israel as a young adult. But of course, I also spoken to them, and I will do so when I'm back in the United States next week for the luncheon. They are very often very open, and they want to meet me. And I mean, you can't see me, you can just listen to my voice. It's striking, because I look so different. The color of my skin is dark, so it makes it easy for them to approach me. And most of the time, it's a very a very warm encounter that leads to hugging, or that leads to a very intense conversation. And it ultimately gives the survivors often hope, because they see that history does not need to repeat itself.
Right, because there's something so profound to the granddaughter of one of, you know, Nazi Germany's most brutal killers being, as you say in your book, you know, someone he would have shot. So
yes,
that contrast is amazing and miraculous in some ways, and actually in
well,
every way.
You know, yeah, it's the outer appearance that I look so different and that I absolutely do not represent the Aryan idea, but it's also the inside. I so much reject what my biological grandfather did, and when people see that I'm different, that my character is different, this is something that you can't fake. You know, when you are close with someone, they can feel it.
In all the work that you've been doing, as you write and do all the research, what are your thoughts when you see, when you hear language that is about the other, you know, that we need to limit the, you know, the access to hope and to life, whether it's for immigrants or people who are different? Does that sort of concern you, or do you have a perspective that you want to share with people whenever you speak?
Well, absolutely. I have a very clear stand. I mean, in Germany, we now have the refugee crisis is all over the media. I very much do think that you have to leave the borders open, that you have the people need help, that you do have to help. Of course, you shouldn't be naive, and it has to be done within limits. But I do think that we have a responsibility as Germans, but everyone has a human responsibility. And the U.S. Holocaust Memorial, for example, took a very brave stand in condemning what's going on in Syria. And I do not only really the stuff of the museum, but also the ideology of the museum is not only to remember what happened in the past, but also to prevent future genocides. I think they do a brilliant job. And yeah, this is I very much can identify with their ideology and the program that the museum has.
Because we, you know, we look at history and we say, oh, I can't believe people let this happen. I can't believe people did this. And yet we are standing in the middle of our own time and saying, well, not here. Well, we don't want them. We certainly, it's, you know, it's some, let somebody else take care of it. And that's what happened during World War II, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we all have a responsibility, and you have elections very soon. So the Americans also have a responsibility.
Yes, everybody has a responsibility. And as you said, you know, to help each other, to be open to not letting this happen again. And the other thing that you mentioned in some of the writing, and I'm not sure if it was from the book, I was kind of trying to get as much. I wanted to know you because this is such a just an astounding experience to learn about. And again, I want our listeners to know that you can find her book in so many different locations. But My Grandfather Would Have Shot Me, A Black Woman Discovers Her Nazi Past. I think that I love what you said about wanting to get close so that you could put it like put distance between you and that. And you also talk about how the people of Germany, it's like, how did they go along with this? You know, how could someone in your own past have gone this way? And how do you stop it from happening again? But that everybody who participated or was there, it's unfortunate that they didn't all have therapy to recover.
Well, the generation immediately after the war, they didn't talk about what was happening. And there was a wall of silence. But today people talk about it, and I think only if you have it have a conversation about it, if there's no silence, then you can learn, and you have to bring up the subject again and again, because yes, the Holocaust was a genocide of gigantic proportion, but it's not the only genocide that we had and we still have in the world. So this is what people have to understand. And always, if you look at the one who is next to you, just, you know, look at him as a human being, not as someone who's a threat.
That's the hardest thing. Elliot, we have Elliot Serrano joining us as well. Go ahead, Elliot.
Jennifer, I was just curious. I know you give these speeches, you expressed your experiences through your writing. But I'm wondering if you have a somewhat different approach when you speak to youth about it. I know in my own personal experience dealing with young folks, we do have a Holocaust museum here in Chicago out in Skokie. And I've visited there, and when they'll have groups of teenagers come through, it's something that sometimes they just can't seem to grasp, you know, the reality of it. Even though the museum here is very straightforward in representing the things that took place, but I think that even the enormity of it is a lot that, you know, kids in this generation just have a hard time grasping. Do you have a way that you approach it when you talk to youth?
Well, I do. Most of after I do see myself more in adult education, because the story that I have to tell is very complex, and I think you have to have a certain age really to get it into detail or to get all the layers. But if I talk to younger adults, I would say, I think most important is that you, and therefore it's actually important that they can speak to survivors. They will be gone very soon, so we have really to take the opportunity. But you have to, like, through storytelling, if you humanize a story, then they can relate to it. But if you just give them numbers, like millions of people died, this is something that they can't really understand, and then it doesn't really get into their heart. And this is where it has to be placed, in their hearts. So that I also do think we do not really have to educate in the sense that that people have to learn something. It's more not about being more intelligent or being more smart, but being wiser. And when you want to get wiser, you really have to feel something. So storytelling is actually a good way of approaching young adults.
Well, and I think that everyone can benefit from hearing your story. And I invite everyone to visit the website ushmm.com. That's the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. Jennifer Tego will be speaking next Wednesday, September 14th, at What You Do Matters Luncheon. There's an 11:15 a.m. registration, the noon lunch and program, and you can buy your tickets on their website. And I look forward to meeting you at that event, Jennifer. Thank you.
One thing, I would also encourage all your listeners to come to D.C. one day and visit the museum. It's a perfect place, really, to learn about the Holocaust. And I also personally donate to the museum. I think it's brilliant. If you have some money left, leave it at the museum. They can really do some good things with it. Okay?
Absolutely. Again, this has been Jennifer Tega calling us from Germany. Thank you so much for that. She's written, "My Grandfather Would Have Shot Me, A Black Woman Discovers Her Nazi Past." Thank you for what you've done for everyone in sharing your story, your very complicated and difficult story. Thank you.
Thank you, and see you in Chicago.
I will see you on Wednesday. More after this on 720 WGN.